wake-up call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Visit them for a quote today at progressive.com. Jared Dubin, CBS Sports, joining us to talk some NFL. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. All right, so, you know, during the early part of the season, everyone was looking at Nathaniel Hackett and the Denver Broncos like, look, Nathaniel Hackett, what is he doing? What is he doing? Should we have been focusing a lot of attention on the Raiders and where Josh McDaniels is right now?
Seems like it. These last 2 weeks have been pretty bad. I don't know what they're doing with their roster more than I don't know what they're doing with their coaching situation. You know, that was a team, I know they made the playoffs last year, but it was a team that had like a 7-win point differential, and they went out and got Devontae Adams and Chandler Jones this offseason, but they tore down the offensive line. They didn't bring in much help other than that on defense. It's just like, They tried to thread this needle in a very fine way, and it does not seem to have worked out really at all.
It was tough because McDaniels wasn't going to a team that was like in shambles and rebuilding. He was trying to take a playoff team and keep the machine going, and that's almost harder to do at sometimes when you're sort of coming in, even when you add a player like Chandler Jones and Devontae Adams, because the scrutiny is higher.
Yeah, and it's like, I know they were a playoff team, but the quality of the team did not match the results last season. Like, they didn't play like a playoff team throughout the year. They happened to have a really good record in close games, and that's not the type of thing that stays consistent from year to year. And if you look at it this year, their record in close games is awful. You know, you wouldn't expect it necessarily to be this bad, but that's what happens when things flip from one year to the next. You go from, you know, 10-7 despite not having a particularly good, you know, strength of performance, to now 2-6, when, you know, I'm looking at it now on Pro Football Reference, they have 3.6 expected wins, so you underperform instead of overperform,
yeah.
And all of a sudden you look like a much worse team.
Let's go to the Packers, and I guess I know quarterback, it's a two-way street sometimes. It's who you're throwing to as well, and he doesn't have Devontae Adams anymore, but his receivers have been banged up and some have been out. But how much different is Aaron Rodgers looking to you, and what is it about the way he's playing that looks so much different than what we've seen when they were putting together 13-win seasons?
Oh, yeah, I'm tired of hearing that it's just the receivers with this team. Like, no, Aaron Rodgers is not playing well at all. He, for so many years, because of, you know, the mind meld that he had with Devontae Adams and before that with guys like Jordy Nelson or Greg Jennings or Randall Cobb or whoever else, he has been able to play a style of quarterback that doesn't really make sense. And if you were like a coach watching the tape, you would tell your quarterback to never play the way that Rodgers is doing it. But because of his, you know, ridiculous accuracy and his ability to make throws from, you know, outrageous platforms and things like that, he was able to get away with it. You know, terrible footwork, terrible arm angles, not really getting himself set to throw the ball. And he was able to just put the ball in the absolute perfect place because of the chemistry that he had with those guys. And now he's trying to make those same throws, but he can't do, like, the correct footwork anymore because he spent so many years not doing it. So he winds up making these one-step slant throws to guys like Sammy Watkins, and they're not in the exact same place that Devontae Adams would be. And because he's not perfect with the footwork, it's like the throw doesn't go to the exact right spot, and it's just off. And then he's taken other throws where it's like he's trying to do trick shot stuff when he should just be throwing the ball. And, I mean, so a lot of their issue, I think, too, is so much of their play calling is RPO-type stuff because they want to be able to take advantage of what the defense does after the snap. But their receivers don't have the chemistry with Rodgers to do the RPO stuff, but Rodgers also doesn't want to hand it off often enough. So it's like, it's all compounding on itself.
Let's go to the Bears, and that was kind of a fun game back and forth with the Dolphins. But Justin Fields, look, I think he's an electric running the football, but I always get nervous when quarterbacks are running the football. 15 carries, 178 yards, but he also threw 28 times and only averaged 4 yards per completion. What is the strategy in Chicago with Justin Fields, and are they capable of opening up more of the passing game? Because eventually you're going to want him to do that too.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing about the running is that he is huge. He's like 6'3", 6'4", 220, 230. So it's not like he's going to get out there and take all these hits that are going to, you know, like pulverize him or something like that. He's very often the one delivering the blow. And, I mean, if you see that 61-yard scramble he had yesterday, he's not taking too many hits anyway because he could just outrun guys. And he's gotten pretty good with sliding to avoid hits or getting out of bounds to avoid hits as well. So I'm not quite as worried there. Obviously, you are at a little bit more of a risk when you're running that often, but I'm not necessarily super worried about that just yet. I think with the passing game, it's going to open up more as they get more guys around him. I mean, a lot of the throws this year have been to guys like Equanimeous St. Brown, Dante Pettis, things like that. They brought in Chase Claypool. They did take a couple of shots down the field in this game. They probably should have gotten a 30 or 40-yard pass interference on that last throw of the game down the left sideline. You know, Javon Holland kind of like threw Claypool down, and I don't really know what happened there, why they didn't get that call. But they're going to open things up a bit more as they get more guys in there, especially along the offensive line, when they have more confidence in them being able to protect better. Right now, a lot of what they're doing in the passing game is like half-boot stuff or rollout stuff, where it's like you give Fields the option to hit a short throw or a throw over the top, and if neither one of those is open, then you trust him to make the right decision, you know, in terms of whether he's going to run it or check it down or something like that.
That's a good breakdown. That's really good. Let's go to the team they played, Miami. That we always kind of look at teams, we kind of mentally put them on tiers. Where do you put this Dolphins team? 6-3. They've got so many good players on this roster.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly look like one of the better teams in the AFC. I mean, I do think that their defense is somewhat of an issue, even after bringing in Bradley Chubb. I mean, it's not like the Bears have been the most explosive offense in the league, and they hung 32 on them in this game. Some of that is just Fields being an alien, like we just talked about.
But,
you know, and they did do a pretty good job of holding, you know, the running backs in check. Khalil Herbert and David Montgomery didn't really do much on the ground. It was basically just Fields making outrageous plays, but, you know, we've seen throughout the rest of the season that, you know, when you get Miami in a back-and-forth passing game, you can throw on them a little bit, but what they're doing offensively, I mean, I just don't know how you're able to stop them. I've been calling it like the space race offense because they just have these ridiculously fast guys. Like, Tyreek Hill is not the only fast guy on the team, obviously. Jaylen Waddle is arguably just as fast as Tyreek Hill. Even got like Cedric Wilson's like the slowest guy on their offense, and he ran like a 4.45 coming out of Boise State back in the day. Raheem Mostert has really good speed. Jeff Wilson, like, they just get all of these fast guys in open space and dare you to figure out how to cover them.
All right, let's go to the Seahawks. What's in the secret sauce in Seattle? What is happening there? 6-3, and really can't blame the media. I know players love to go, nobody believed in us, and they're haters. I think there was a legitimate analysis of this team that was, you know, pretty predictable given their circumstances. And now it's 6-3. What's in the secret sauce?
Geno Smith.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's just playing at an incredibly high level. Like, it's not like he's just being schemed into stuff and taking advantage of what's there for him. He's making, like, outrageous throws every week, back-to-back. Kenneth Walker looks incredible. And I think a big part of it, too, is their offensive line has just been so much better than anybody could have reasonably expected. The two rookie tackles that they drafted, Charles Cross and Abe Lucas, are playing, you know, pretty well for a pair of, you know, rookie bookend tackles on that offensive line. And, you know, they're getting strong push. They're doing, honestly, a lot of the things that people begged Pete Carroll to do in terms of, like, play action on early downs and not just going, like, run pass on every single drive. They're being more aggressive in fourth down situations and things like that. And they're doing it with Geno Smith when they wouldn't do it with Russell Wilson for years. And, you know, it's all working for them. And it's not just those things, but those things are certainly helping.
Is it time to start looking at the Minnesota Vikings as a serious contender in the AFC? We always hesitant with Minnesota, at least I am, but now it's 7-1. Is that time now to look at them differently?
I don't know what to make of that team. I honestly,
yeah, I'm with you, man.
I feel like they haven't been overly impressive in really all that many of their games. And I mean, you look at it, with the exception of the game against the Packers in week one, every single game has been a one-score win.
Right.
How sustainable is that? Like, if they were 5-3 instead of 7-1, would we be talking about them as a contender in the NFC. I don't really think so. You know, they are 7-1. They get to keep those 7 wins, but also you wouldn't expect them to win every one score game going forward. So it's like I find it kind of hard to balance.
I look at them and I see a team that's good. But I don't see them I'm not seeing greatness. I'm seeing good. Like statistically, they look pretty good, but I don't see like a Bills team that pops out with 30 points a game or something.
Right. Like the thing is, nobody in the league is great right now. Like
that is a great point. That is a great point. You're 100% right. There really isn't a team that you would go there. Even the Eagles, you feel like they're not head and shoulders above everybody else. They're just piling wins.
Yeah, they certainly are. And it's not like all of their wins have been close games. They just like completely dominate teams in the first half. And then in the second half, it's like, all right, we can go on cruise control a little bit. That's basically what it's been throughout the entire season. But they're not going to get challenged all that often the rest of the way. I'm pretty sure they're going to race to that number one seed. Like it would take them slipping up against Dallas and against a team that Dallas has already beaten, plus Dallas not slipping up the rest of the way themselves, for the Eagles to lose that number one seed at this point.
Jared Dubin, CBS Sports. Always good talking to you, my friend. Thanks you for joining us on a busy Monday. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Have a good day.
You got it. As we talk some NFL. I love it. I'm like, he's like us. Like, this is a guy that gets inside all this, gets inside the numbers, and he doesn't know what to make of the Vikings either. I'm with him. It feels like he's right. Every game, they beat the Packers pretty handedly in that week one. And at the time, remember, we said, oh, well, the Packers, they lost to the Saints last year in their first game. And look what they did. They went, Packers went nowhere. The Vikings, they lose the next week to the Eagles. Okay, yeah, it's Minnesota. And then they rip off 6 straight wins, all by one score. Some of the wins were against teams that aren't that great, like the Lions, Commanders, Saints aren't that good, Bears are all right. They did beat the Dolphins, but I don't know what to make of them either. I really don't. It's really bizarre. And here's the thing. They might be the number one seed in the NFC. I mean, if the Eagles lose, they're only a game behind Philadelphia for the best record in the conference. I mean, could the playoffs run through Minnesota? I don't know. They could easily, you know, be not the team that does that. Who knows? But right now they're playing good. They're playing good enough to win these games by one score. And Kirk Cousins went home to Washington and all that. So thanks, Jared Dubin, joining us here on Wake Up Calls. We continue.